My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Congratulations to the birthday people, and welcome to the newcomers. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we usually talk about ourselves, which is true against my very nature, but that's what you're supposed to do. What it was like, what happened, what it is like today. And before I forget it, I want to thank my friend for driving me down. I have a show for tonight. And I want to thank you all for having me to come to this particular meeting tonight to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm not going to get off into a great long drawn-out deal because it's boring to me, and I know what you're going to feel like by the time I'm through with it. I tell people where I'm from. It has nothing to do with the disease, but I'm from Louisiana. And I was raised in a family of 7 children, a mother and a father. And there are times when some of us indicate the fact that there are certain things that make us turn out the way we do, and I'm totally convinced that I turned out the way that I did because that's the way I am by my very nature. I wasn't even lucky enough to be reared in a broken home. My mother and father stuck it out. They stayed together. I realized something else about addicted prone people. We are strange. It's amazing. I can see why most of us had to do something. It was necessary. Mentally, we are the thinkingest people in the world. Busy-minded. Even the lazy ones have busy minds. It's busy. By the time I was 10, I was just tired, just exhausted. I was tired. And there's no doubt about that. I can see why that we are truly different than other people. I'm not kidding you. I was running this country most of my life. Didn't nobody know it but me. I was busy. I've always had a problem with trying to adjust to whatever was, wherever I was at. I never seemed to be able to fit. They would make remarks that always bothered me. They said, all Negroes were born with rhythm. Wherever they got that from, I'll never know. It bothered me. It bothered me a lot. After being sober 33 years, I still dance sitting down. I'm one of those people that it bothered me. And to show you that we don't see things too clear, my grandfather was my hero. He made alcohol and drank most of it. And he looked so peaceful to me. He would just sit in one place a week. Nothing bothered him. He just sat in one spot for days and not move. I said, I like that about him. He's terrific. Now, the next thing is the fact that it is most difficult to recognize a major problem. And you can be an alcoholic at any age. It doesn't really matter. I had the problem the first time I took a drink, and 15 years later, I had the same problem, and I didn't know what it was. I had no idea what it was. There are some people that can drink socially, but I never could, and I didn't even know it. And I have a brother that I resented. He could sit down and drink and talk politics. You give me a drink, I don't care what you do with the country. Do what you have to do with it. What you do with it. And it bothered me that when I take a drink, I was the kind that could not stay in one place. I never had a neighborhood bar. I was a guy who would take a drink and wind up some ridiculous place for no reason. And it bothered me. Now, the next thing that bothered me, my own behavior bothered me. I would do things under influence, and when I'd get sober, I'd be ashamed of and leave town. I lived all over America. I moved because of my own conduct. And I had a lot of problem with job because I'm an alcoholic, and I did not know it. And you would think, if I'm half as bright as I look, I would have recognized that I had the problem. I was this kind of guy. If I got ready to go look for a job, I'd take a drink, and once I feel the effect, I don't want the job today. I'll go tomorrow. I'm disappointed over and over again, over and over again. And I still didn't know what the problem was. And I love to drive. Give me the keys, please. Just let me have it. I've had drunk people jumping out of cars for me because I... And it bothered me the next day. It bothered me a lot. I said, I won't do that again. Over and over and over again. And I was the kind that never believed in violence, and I would get violent. Some people drink and get happy. I would always get evil when I drank. I never got happy. I didn't smile. kicked the dog and threw at the cat. I just couldn't help it. I didn't like it, but I could not help it, and I didn't know why. And as a teenager, I'd get so drunk and so sick until I just knew I was going to die. Now, you would think somebody like that would have known. I had no idea. No idea. And from the time I took my first drink until I took the last one, I never went more than 7 days without drinking. Always believing that next time it's going to be different. Had a lot of domestic trouble. A lot of that, because I can't come home when I drink. Now, that's another problem. Ain't no way. And my pattern was usually, I would get paid as most of the time on a Friday, and I would decide that I'll cash my check at the liquor store. It's easy. You don't have to stand in a line. That made sense to me. And I'd go into the liquor store. And being a nice person, that man would cash my check. I'd be so grateful. I said, I got to do him a favor for this. Kind act like this. He deserves something. Don't have a dog or don't need dog food, so I'll just buy a half pint. Show him my gratitude. And I meant that. And I was the kind of alcoholic that was ashamed to carry a bottle in my pocket unless I was already drinking. I felt it was a disgrace. With my personality, go around with a bottle in my pocket, that's a disgrace. And I would usually go in the liquor store bathroom and drink the half pint. Throw the bottle away. And walk out. And many times I didn't live 20 blocks from where I cashed my check. And did you know, before I get home, I decide I'm going to stop up at the club. Let them see how well I'm doing. And I'd sit in the bar and run off at the mouth. I'd say things that I didn't know what I was talking about, and I knew it. When I drink, it sets me up for talking. And that you can't help but get into a lot of trouble. I actually seen people leaving clubs to keep listening to me. So I can't stand it. Now, when I was drinking, it didn't bother me, but the next day I'd be ashamed to go back in the same bar. If I could have shut up, I'd have died drunk. If I could just hush, just shut up. When I was coming across country once, and the guy stopped to pick me up. I was hitchhiking coming across Arizona. And it gets hot in Arizona, believe me. And this man stopped, and I didn't understand it then. 30 minutes later, he slammed on his brakes and said, get out of my car. I can't stand it. Put me out. I did a lot of running because I was always doing something I didn't like. And I would leave town. And I ran and I ran and I ran. And I still didn't know what the problem was. I made jail. And believe me, I'm not jail material. When I would come to in jail, I wouldn't breathe until they let me out of the place. My thinking was like this. Why would they put a nice fellow like me in here with all these killers? Even the little old ladies are killers. Why would they put me in here? This ought to be against the law. I actually thought like that. And I made jail many times, but I made it twice in one night. And it still didn't tell me that I had a drinking problem. Now, what actually happened, I got to the place where my attitude and my living got to be so depressing even to me. I was one of the homeless before, didn't know what to call them. Now, and I didn't like it. I did not like it, and I couldn't figure out why. I remember being down in Arizona in the last of the 40s on the Indian reservation. Now, why I went there, I'll never know. I still don't know. And I decided I wanted to be a cowboy. I don't know why. It made sense to me at the time. I bought myself a cowboy suit and a hat. And I was the only black cowboy in Arizona in 48. It made sense to me at the time. Now, what I wanted to do was have a picture made standing by a cactus bush to send back to Louisiana to my mother so she'll see what a cactus bush looked like. That's why I wanted to do that. Now, when she got this picture with me standing in this cowboy suit by the cactus bush, she panicked. She says, come home, you don't look too well. The way I got out of there, she sent for me. She sent me money, and I went back to Louisiana. Now, the reason that I mention that, there are times now when I really almost forget what it used to be like. I went back to Louisiana, and the first thing my brothers and sisters want to do is to celebrate my arrival. For some reason, my sisters and brothers always boost my ego. They said I was the smartest one in the whole bunch. Because I was always on the move, but they never observed the way I'd left and the way I returned always. They never did. They kept my ego way out of hand. Now, when I get home, they want to celebrate little brother's arrival. and they bought liquor. 3 days later, my same mother told me, said, "You've got to be bum shot from the war. Something's wrong with you." And she bought me a one-way ticket to California. Now, I don't know what she paid for this thing, but we rode for months coming to California. We rode and rode and rode. The bus actually stopped someplace. It wasn't even a building. People come out to weed and got on, and I'm going to California. Now, to show you the sickness in this, I sat on this lousy bus with everything that I had in a suitcase. And every now and then I would get inspired. You know, my luck has been so bad so long, when I get to California, I'm bound to get discovered. That's what I thought. And I did. My first stop was 5th and San Pedro. And I walk into a little old dingy joint that morning, scared to death. I was the kind of guy that was terrified of everybody when I was not drinking. And when I was drinking, I wasn't afraid of nothing. Absolutely nothing. Now, I had a lot of domestic troubles, as I mentioned, and I had married everybody that said yes. Believe me. And if you think it's fun, try it. Even drunk is not fun. And when I arrive in Los Angeles, I'm just terrified. And I don't have no other place to go. I'm out of money. And I remember that I had an ex-wife in Los Angeles, and I ran off and left with an unborn kid some years prior to this, and we had been divorced. But I drank one beer to show what alcohol would do to the mind of an alcoholic if you're like me. One beer. And I hadn't called in years. I forgot about it, really. I drank one beer. In sheer desperation, a number come to mind, and I rushed to the phone, and I dialed that number, and it was still that number. And you know what I thought? You see what a drink will do for me. Now, the miracle in that is the fact that I ran off and left with this kid, and he'd have to keep him paying child support, and the moment I called her, she was glad to hear from me. And within 45 minutes, she was down 5th Street to bring me to her house to show me our son for the first time. Now, you would think that I would have been grateful. I didn't understand that at the time. The first few minutes, I was so humbled and so grateful. Before I can go 45 blocks, you know what I'm worried about? I don't even know I'm going to get to spend the night. I'm worried about who she had been seeing. It made sense to me. That made sense. And I was just as serious and as honest then as I am now. Just to show you the insanity in us that is unrecognized with those around us, even ourselves do not recognize this. I arrived here on the 18th of December, 1952. She took me home with her. Now, on the 24th of that December, to show you how alcohol had eliminated my courage, and I didn't know it, I realized that I was jealous. And all I wanted to tell her, don't leave me at this house. I want to go where you go. I want to see what you do. That's all I want to do. And did you know, after failing for 15 years, I was convinced I'm going to take a drink and I can tell her. Totally convinced. And what actually happened? Less than a week I'd been living at her house. She even encouraged me not even look for a job during the holidays. Don't do that to an alcoholic. Get him on the job as soon as you can, please. And she was just that kind to me. Now, on the 24th of that December, I convinced myself, I'm going to have a drink so I can tell her I'm jealous. I don't want you to leave me. I want to go where you go. I want to see what you do. That's all I want to do. And I convinced myself, this time it's going to be different. And this is what happened, the reason why I was grateful to come here tonight. That night, I began drinking. And whenever I would drink, I would feel physically like I was growing feathers. And I would get mentally wound up in anger and hostility constantly when I drank. Thing that aggravated me 6 years ago, when I take a drink, come back just like yesterday. I go into my fit, and she tells me the next morning something that people have been telling me for years, which I didn't believe. She said, "You know what? We looked in on you yesterday, and you didn't look human. We went and spent the night at the neighbor's house." And I went upstairs that night in her house. I know nine was a blackout, and took a knife, cut off all of her clothes, and snatched her phones out of the wall. And I came to that morning, which was Christmas morning, and God knows I wanted to die. Now, she had all the ministers in that area to come over and pray for me that morning. God knows I wanted it to work, but it didn't. To show you the insanity, before that day was over, I convinced her if she hadn't left me alone, I wouldn't have did what I did. And before that day was over, she was apologizing to me for wrecking her house. Now, the next 6 months was unbelievable. I made my first meeting June the 26th in 1953, and what had actually happened? On that day, I was drinking at home, which was not my pattern. I'm a runner when I drink, but I was drinking at home, and for some reason, I go into what I know now was a mental blackout. And for some reason, I went in the kitchen and got a kitchen fork and tried to kill myself with it and punctured myself all over and almost bled to death. And to show you what my attitude was like, when I would get violent if she was afraid of me, and I'd get violent if she wasn't afraid of me. We had a 5-year-old kid that wouldn't even come in the room where I was when I was in there alone, and I'd get drunk and throw him across the room like a football, and when I'd get sober, I'd go to the park and cry myself to sleep and wonder why. Now, when she came in from work that afternoon and found me laying in the floor bleeding to death, she didn't know what happened. She ran and got the neighbors, and I never will forget it. It was about 3 when the neighbors came over. It seemed like 24 to me. And I'm laying in the floor bleeding to death, and they wouldn't come in. They stuck their head in the door, and they told us, you know what? Something wrong with him. They had discussed me at great length. I didn't know it, but they had really discussed me in the neighborhood at great length. And another miracle happened. They had discussed me with a lady who lived down at the far end of the block, who was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous at that time, 3 years, by the name of Connie. And they all go down to get Connie to bring her down there, and Connie being sober and was able to identify with me, she says, no, I'm not going down there, he's crazy. But I'll give you a number, and you take it back down there, and you make sure he make the call. Don't make the call for that tramp. Make him get up and make the call. And I resented Connie before I met her. Now, the neighbors come in this time, and they won't leave, and I'm so frustrated, and I'm so frightened, I don't know what to do. And I get so nervous, I make this call. And I prayed, God, please don't let nobody be home. And when I look back today, it seemed like on the half ring, they grabbed the phone. The central office was on Wilshire at that time, 1805 West Wilshire. And he did not ask me if I was an alcoholic, thank God, because I was so mixed up, I didn't know. If you're here and you know what the problem is, you're way ahead of the game. I had no idea. No idea what the problem was. And this man asked me something that turned out to be profound in my case. He asked me, he'd say, are you in trouble? I said, I've been in trouble all of my life. And he frightened me behind it because he says, fine. Then he gave me some more numbers to call. The neighbors won't leave is the only reason why I do all this calling, and everybody was home. Everybody was home. Now that night, June the 26th in 1953, as I look back today, seemed like to me it lasted for 10 years. My evil wife and this crazy kid go to bed and leave me up, don't even say goodnight to me. And I sat in the chair all night long that night, worried about what they're going to do to me tomorrow. And I waited, it seemed like forever. She'd get up to go to work the next morning. I didn't have a job and hadn't had one. And I never forget, I asked her, I said, please don't leave me this day. I feel like I'm going mad. I might kill myself. I feel like I'm going to die. And I felt that way. And you know what she said to me? I'm the only one that's working. I'll probably be the only one that'll ever have a job, and if you die, you will die alone, and went on about her business. I stayed indoors that day, and I sat there, and I waited. I believe today I know what it's like to be on death row. I waited all day long that day. And if I hadn't been so frightened, I'd have left the house, but I was too afraid to leave the house. And I looked down the driveway that afternoon, and two strangers coming up the driveway, and I knew these were the guys, and God knows if there had been a back way out, I'd have ran, but there was no back way out. Long, tall, dignified guy, one of them had on a necktie, and the thing that caught my mind, to show you how insane we really are and don't know it, a little short guy, about 4 feet tall, his nose was bigger than his hammer. That's the first thing that caught my attention. I couldn't get my mind off his nose. And they walked up, and they told me they were alcoholics. And I was impressed with the tall guy, but I was concerned about the one with the big nose. It bothered me. I don't know why it bothered me so. And he talked all the time. Now, I don't know what it was like drunk, but he was weird sober. Now, I didn't know that you didn't have to accept your sponsors like you guys know today. I didn't know that, because I didn't want the big nose one at all. Because he stayed on my case all the time. He never shut up. Now, they took me to my first meeting, and believe me, we've come a long ways. Back in those days, 10 people in a meeting was a convention. And I felt like there was 1,000 people there, probably 20 people, maybe. And with my luck, I was the only newcomer there. And when they asked for newcomers, I didn't know what to do. And this little short guy with the big nose caught me by the shoulder and stood me up and told me, this boy's been drunk, we're going to get him sober, and flopped me back in my seat. My first thought was, God, if I ever get enough money, I'm getting out of California. That's what I thought. And I'm serious. I'm not kidding you. If I'd had a bad heart, I'd have died. I'm not kidding you. It just told me totally up. But they began doing here what you've done here tonight, and I am so grateful. I'm so grateful they did what they did that night. Now, I never knew what the problem was, and people would tell me that you just don't care. They would also tell me you want to be tough, and I did not feel none of those things they were saying to me. I didn't feel them. And that night, when they began to do what you've done here tonight, I knew for the first time what my problem was. And I was frightened. Believe me, I was frightened. They began to explain something to me that had never occurred to me. And I was so able to identify with it until I sat there that night, simply terrified, because all I could see for myself was stumbling to a sudden and tragic death. I've come to lots of time with doctors picking glass out of me, knocking out shatterproof windshields. And I've been bit by my own brother. I have had it, and I know it. Sitting in that meeting that night, I could see what happened when I take a drink, unlike a social drinker. When I take a drink, mentally, when I feel the effect, my mind changes, and I have absolutely no control. The first time I took a drink was to ask a girl for a date, which I was madly in love with. Never had the courage to ask. And I took a drink, and the moment I felt the effect, I'm busy tonight, I'll see her tomorrow night. And I went on and on like that, on and on like that. So that night, sitting in that meeting, I knew for the first time what my problem was. It had never occurred to me that I was an alcoholic. In fact, when they told me that I was one, I felt better, really. I actually felt better, because the way I felt most of my life was just absolutely unbearable. And in spite of that, I could not stop drinking. The next thing that really helped these sponsors, I didn't know you couldn't dump them. They came every day, took me to meetings which you didn't want to go to. The next thing that helped was a fear that I had. I didn't know what they would do to you if they caught you drinking. I didn't have the slightest idea what they would do. And I didn't ask. I wasn't going to get caught. I said, I'll just hang around and see what's going on. The moment I began to listen with an open mind, I realized for the first time in my life that I was in the right place for the first time in my life. It's amazing to me that you show me an addicted person. It does not really matter what color, what race, or creed he might be. We're weird. Weird people. Weird people. We're the thickest people in the world. We see and we feel and we hear everything. Busy-minded. Even the lazy ones have busy minds. We're busy-minded people. And this is the way we are by their nature. Now, learning how to live in a real world with real people has been very frightening for me. I discovered right away that I was very shy and very fearful. And I felt outside and alone all of my life for no reason other than that's just the way I am by my very nature. In spite of my feeling about these sponsors, they led me around and they introduced me to people and they made me feel like somebody until I was able to see the nature of my problem. In a very short time, the obsession to drink was removed. Without praying, I'm not going to tell you not to pray for it, but just by going to meetings and not drinking, by the time my body was free, the obsession to drink had been completely and totally removed. And believe me, when you live with that nightmare as long as I did, the obsession, just the obsession alone being removed is enough to remain grateful. I used to go home, pray to God, don't let me go out and waste this money, I got to pay rent. And I would decide I got a little more than rent, and I'd go and take a drink, and you know what I'd do? The moment I'd feel it, you know what I'd think then? You ought to be glad to get half the rent. That made sense to me. 3 days later, I'd come stumbling home, sick and ready to die. And you know what I think then? If he wants some rent money, let him get a job. I'm sick. And to show you the fear that I would have of the landlord, on days when I was not drinking, I'd leave home at 4 o'clock in the morning to hide from the landlord, go to the park and hide with no job to go to. And I'd get a drink and I'd go find him. So look, don't bug me about the rent. I don't want to pay no rent. Then I'd be ashamed when I get over and I'd leave town. The next thing that helped this big nose guy that was a real weirdo, he was an inventory freak. He drove me crazy about the inventory. And I got so nervous and frustrated about it until I took it. My own inventory, as best I could, as honest as I knew how. I revealed things to another person that I swore that God nobody else would ever know about. Now, I was ashamed to take it with my real sponsor, and I took it with another guy. And you know what I thought the moment I got through all this stuff? my first conscious moment, what I thought was this: I hope he'll drop dead so he can't tell nobody. And I felt guilty about that. I felt guilty. And I began to do what I believe is necessary. You can do absolutely nothing about the problem until you know what the problem is, and you will never find out what the problem is until you look within yourself. I'd been taking people's inventory all of my life to no avail, and I didn't realize that. Only when I became willing, and the book talks about every alcoholic must hit his own bottom. I knew now that I'd hit my bottom. Until you hit your bottom, there's nothing we can do for you. I had truly hit my bottom. I was unwilling to live the way I had been living and thinking the way I'd been thinking and feeling the way I'd been feeling. I was absolutely unwilling to do it. And I became willing to do all these things that were suggested to me, even though I didn't really want to, I did them anyhow. And I found out for the first time in my life that I was really somebody. I did not have to justify my existence. I had every right to be here. And I've been doing that now. A lot of people don't know. I had what they call a slip. I very seldom talk about it, but I did. What happened, got a job right away, bought myself a convertible with a kid on the back, running up and down Broadway looking for a suntan, which I didn't need. I said, Mama ought to see me now. Never had it so good. And mentally, I thought, anybody doing this well will never drink again. And believe me, 13 months later, I was running backwards drunk. And some of my friends tell me they know why they got drunk the next time. I had no idea, none. And I didn't have enough courage to call. I guess that's why this program means so much to me. They found out that I was drinking, and they came out and got me and brought me back. Thank God. And this big nose guy did the same thing. He held me up. This boy didn't listen. He'd been drunk. Flopped me back down in my seat, and I would just die, just simply die. God, he'd almost kill me. And he began to force me to participate. Now, some of the old-timers tell the newcomers, shut up and sit down and listen. You don't know enough. I believe the first day your soul will start talking. Don't wait until you know what you're talking about. That's too late. Just talk. Don't wait. I really believe that. And I encourage newcomers, get involved as soon as you can. Get involved as soon as you can. Because I realize today, if it had not been for people pushing me the way they pushed me, I would have had to die drunk. I would have had to die drunk. Someone mentioned something about colored people. And when I came in, there wasn't too many of us around. And believe me, we don't get it too easy. Now, I don't know why. And sometime I think about it, and I'm so grateful to you people. I think now they were trying to save me for statistic purposes. Tom O'Connor, Chuck C., and all those guys, they hauled me all over the place. They made me talk. I know I would have never been able to stay sober if they hadn't did that to me. They forced me to do it. They showed me off all over the place, thank God. I didn't like it, but they did it. And I realize today that they saved my life and my sanity. I read something by a great poet, I'm going to share it with you and shut up. That makes a lot of sense to me. You see, I want the new people to know that this program is not just to get you sober, it's a way of life. And this is what the great poet had to say. He said, if you find a slave sleeping, don't wake him up. He may be dreaming of freedom. And then he went on saying, I reply, if you find a slave sleeping, wake him up and tell him about freedom. And that's what this program is all about. I was totally convinced that my problem was being black. There were black people successful all over the place. I did not realize that. I was absolutely convinced that if I wasn't black, I wouldn't have these problems. I used to pray for a pill to change me. What it's like today. Just as black as I always was. I have a sneaking idea I'll always be like this. What it is like today. And I have been truly accepted by the great majority. I've been all over the place, all over the place. I was granted the privilege of going in and out of any jail in the city of Los Angeles by the police department. I had a Class A pass that I almost got drunk over. I want people to think I was a detective so bad I didn't know what to do. Always was a Class A pass. I used to have meetings, and I've been able to sit in the judge's chair and him ask me questions. I've been all over the place. Now, had I known that all these things would be available, I'd still be drunk bragging about them. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. What it's really like today for me. I don't have not one regret left. I feel that my life has not been lived in vain. I want you to know, and I know now, that we have an obligation that no one else can fulfill but you and I. And it's the care to mess that sick and suffering guy and gal who is still suffering. I want you to know an addiction is truly an addiction. A doesn't endorse anything else, but an addiction is an addiction. I was hooked on plain cigarettes most of my life. When I came to the program, I burned up 3 packs a day, brushing my teeth, blowing smoke. I tell people this, which is a lie. I tell them 3 days before I quit, I had a bushy head of hair. Later, I look like I look now. I haven't had a cigarette in 30 years. 30 years ago, I quit. And I do not have the obsession. And when I don't have nothing else left, all I have to do is think about the obsession for alcohol and cigarettes. And I get grateful right then. I want to thank you all for having me here. I'm truly grateful. It's a privilege just to be here. Just to be here. With that, I'm going to stand and look stupid.